Today on Straight Talk Africa, we look at some stories and events that made headlines in 2014 on the mother continent. The Mandela Washington Fellowship, the significance of the first ever U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit, and political transitions in Burkina Faso and Zambia. And yes, international and local efforts at managing the Ebola epidemic in West Africa. That's coming up next, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. It's Wednesday, January 7th. I am Shaka Sali. A terrific and happy new year to you all.
Well, happy new year to all of you as well, to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I am Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll reflect on some of the top stories that dominated the headlines on the African continent in the past year, and look ahead to what it's in store for 2015.
Lots to delve into today, Shaka. Coming up later in our STA inbox, our audience has written to tell us what stories meant the most to them in 2014 and what's important to their lives moving forward. We'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
But first, Africans will most likely defer the list of the continent's many impactful events of 2014. My colleague Paul Sisco has more.
The biggest story on the continent in 2014 was undoubtedly the West African Ebola epidemic, the largest in history. Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Guinea were the three hardest-hit countries with over 13,000 laboratory-confirmed cases, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. The virus is still spreading, and nearly 8,000 people have died in those three nations. Thanks to its rapid response, Nigeria, however, was able to quickly stop the deadly disease there. Nigeria is sub-Saharan Africa's most populous country, and it now boasts the continent's largest and fastest-growing economy, surging past South Africa in 2014. However, the terrorist group Boko Haram intensified its violent insurgency in northeast Nigeria with repeated bombings, shootings, and abductions. The militant group also expanded its violence beyond Nigeria's borders in 2014. As we enter 2015, the group's reign of terror has displaced over a million citizens, with nearly 300 Chibok schoolgirls still missing. Elsewhere, it has been tough going in South Sudan, despite endless proclaimed ceasefires, talks, and negotiations. Meanwhile, what observers believe was an attempt to overthrow Gambian President Yahya Jammeh was foiled on December 30th. The United States, United Nations, and African Union are calling on all parties to maintain peace and calm. President Yahya Jammeh himself seized power in the small West African country in 1994. He has long faced criticism for his human rights record. Gambia is one of the world's most oppressed and isolated nations. Africans witness rapid leadership change in Burkina Faso, where President Blaise Compaoré abruptly resigned after 2 days of massive protests, triggered by attempts to seek an unconstitutional third term. In Zambia, President Michael Sata died suddenly October 28th, elevating former Vice President Guy Scott to acting president. Zambians are poised to vote for a new president on January 20th. U.S. President Barack Obama hosted the first ever U.S. African Leaders Summit in August, bringing 40-plus African heads of state to Washington, D.C., primarily to expand trade relations. And the Young African Leaders Initiative brought 500 YALI fellows from 47 African countries to America to network, study, and gain work experience. The program is now called the Mandela Fellowship for Young African Leaders. It is expected to continue for years to come. Among the many highlights for us here on Straight Talk Africa was the visit of Sarah Obama, President Obama's paternal grandmother, our audience engaging Ebola Knowledge is Life Town Hall special held in November, and Straight Talk Africa's Ali Mazuri tribute. The legendary scholar and political thinker died on October 12th. He was 81. Paul Sisco, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Now, joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests, Dr. Darius Mearns, president of AfriCare, a nonprofit organization based here in Washington, D.C. Prior to joining AfriCare, Dr. Mearns served as acting chief executive officer of the Millennium Challenge Corporation, or MCC. I have to say, frankly, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time, Dr. Mearns.
Thank you, sir.
You're most welcome, sir. Mulegwa Zihindura, president of the Center for Political and Strategic Studies and the former spokesperson for DRC President Joseph Kabila. Hey, Mulegwa, how have you been, man?
Doing fine, Brother Shaka. Good to see you this morning.
Well, good to host you again on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And this time, of course, right from the Washington studios.
Exactly. Thank you very much.
How does it feel for you?
Oh, it's beautiful. You know, the weather is beautiful here. I like the cold weather, so I'm at ease. I feel very ease.
I see. And last but not least, Dr. Henry Gombia, publisher and editor of the London Evening Post, an online newspaper based out of the United Kingdom. He joins us from our London studios. Hey, Dr. Gombia. Well, I gather that they're trying to fix some technical difficulties. We'll be able to bring him on later. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Dr. Mearns. When you look back to 2014, what immediately comes to your mind, really, in as far as Africa is concerned, if you thought about the highlights?
When I look back at last year, I think Africa very much was put in the spotlight globally.
Mm-hmm.
On the negative side, around the peace and security challenges in the continent, whether it was the challenge of Ebola,
mm-hmm.
or the problems of the conflicts in the north of Mali, South Sudan, Central African Republic, so many.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, much of that coverage was negative. On the positive side, there are many great things that happened on the continent, mm-hmm. that I think bode well for 2015. When you look at the progress that was made on the economic front, one small example of that was the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit,
mm-hmm.
with the spotlight on Africa, $33 billion of investment being committed.
Mm-hmm. I gather that yesterday you were one of the 40 people that somehow interact with Africa that were invited to the White House.
Yes, and it was an opportunity to take stock of what happened at the summit and mm-hmm. the business forum, and to talk about what happens next, how to sustain that momentum, to keep that spotlight on Africa, to ensure that going into 2015, mm-hmm. that message does not get lost, because some things have changed since the summit. We had midterm elections in the United States. Now, with Republicans in control of both the House and the Senate, I think that's an opportunity on the Africa agenda. Africa is one of the things that I think both sides of the aisle can actually agree on. So we're hopeful that we see passage of AGOA as a result.
Were you very optimistic based on what you had from the policymakers there? Because there are a lot of skeptics, frankly, who are saying that it's just talking the talk. There's no walking that talk.
I think the administration has committed itself to showing people that this is going to be different, that this momentum will continue. I look at the Doing Business initiative on mm-hmm. Africa being mm-hmm. run out of the Commerce Department. I look at the investments that are being made to start putting people on the continent. OPEC, for mm-hmm. the first time, is going to have somebody sitting in Abidjan shortly.
Right.
To make sure that there is a real follow-through
mm-hmm.
in, on the trade and investment agenda. So I think, you know, I certainly hear the focus on Yali to make sure that this continues well beyond this administration. So I certainly hear from the administration a determination that Africa does not get lost on the agenda, because they recognize Africa has lots of choices today. I think that's the big story of 2014.
Very interesting.
Not only the summit in Washington, but African heads of state were in a number of capitals around the world. Very shortly, the 6th FOCAC in China will take place, where I guarantee you the Chinese will announce $33 billion plus.
Mulegwa, what about the importance of what Dr. Mann's referred to as YALI, which in fact now is known as the Mandela Washington Fellowship? What about that? Is that the answer, for example, given that U.S. President Barack Obama back in 2009, he addressed Africa from the Ghanaian capital, Accra, and said that Africa does not need strong men. It needs strong institutions.
Yeah, you know, correct. You know, I think, you know, let me dovetail on what he said, what my colleague on my left said. We've seen a lot of good things happen in Africa now. There's a lot of economic boom and so on and so forth. Now, since August of 2014, we have seen the United States for once really focus on Africa. With the U.S.-Africa Leadership Summit, where I was here in Washington myself, we've seen the focus. And indeed, President Obama is right. What we need in Africa is to build strong institutions. We need to bring strong institutions because, you know, people are human beings. You know, they come and go. Like we say, you and I have discussed in the past, the only thing that is permanent in life is change. Everything else, you know, will come and pass. So we can't just focus on certain individuals, you know, because after some time they'll be gone. And President Obama was right. And for this fellowship that he's doing now, empowering, if you could, future African leaders. That's very important, you know, investing in the future. It's not the only thing that needs to be done. More needs to be done to ensure that we are investing in a lot of people in Africa, especially the young and so on and so forth, to take over in the future.
What about the Ebola epidemic in West Africa, namely Guinea, Sierra Leone and Liberia? What would you say about the, you know, efforts to manage the pandemic so far, especially from the African perspective?
Well, first of all, let me say that this was an atrocity. This pandemic was terrible. It was horrible. It's something that we've lived through already in the Democratic Republic of Congo in the past. And so what happened actually in West Africa is something that has happened to us. But we were able to deal with it because it tried to come to one part of the Democratic Republic of Congo. But our people were ready. Our doctors were ready. We had a system put in place already in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Our Ministry of Health worked overnight. They quarantined the area already where this problem had begun. And so we were very prepared. So unfortunately, that was not the same thing for other countries in Africa, like Liberia. We've seen what has happened in Sierra Leone. Tons and tons of people have died. Families have been decimated. A family of seven, you lose four people and so on and so forth. So it was very, very atrocious. But one thing, though, that comes to my mind is what happened in Liberia. Many Liberian politicians began to flee the country, actually. Now, these were people that were politicians, you know, were beginning to flee the country instead of staying with the population and staying at home and try to look to seek for a solution. So this pandemic was terrible, and it was really, really bad for Africa. And thank God in Congo we were ready for this.
But how come you were not able to share your expertise with your brothers and sisters in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea?
We did. We actually did. A lot of the doctors from the Democratic Republic of Congo were actually sent to Liberia and to Sierra Leone to help them. To this day, many of our doctors are still there helping them, and I am very grateful that we could contribute to the healthcare in those countries.
Thank you very much. Now, we'll pause for a short break and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA 2014 Africa Review. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with the other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
Let's take a quick look at Africa 2014 Year in Review. The West Africa Ebola epidemic began in December 2013 in Guinea, later spreading to Liberia, Sierra Leone, Nigeria, and Senegal. Nearly 4,000 people have died from the disease. In January 2014, fighting between supporters of President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar continue in South Sudan. On the 20th of that month, Catherine Samba Panza is appointed as interim president of the Central African Republic, replacing former Seleka leader Michel Djotodia. In February 2014, Kenyan actress Lupita Nyong'o wins an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for her work in the film 12 Years a Slave. In April 6, 2014, Nigeria's economy surpasses South Africa's as the largest on the continent. On April 14, Nigerian terror group Boko Haram attacks a school in Chibok, abducting 230 schoolgirls. Dozens escape, but nearly 200 girls are still missing.
Sia Nyama Karoma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaks to VOA on the Ebola crisis.
I would want the people in West Africa to know that Ebola is real. Ebola kills. Early detection and prompt treatment can save lives. And I'm asking our people not to victimize or stigmatize survivors. Ebola is a challenge, but together we'll all be able to overcome it.
That was Sia Nyama Karoma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaking to VOA Africa on the Ebola crisis.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui. Let me come back to you. Dalias, you said you wanted to comment something on the Ebola epidemic?
Yes, colossal failures globally, as well as challenges of leadership on the ground. The good news is you see the numbers in Liberia are coming down. That's because of the way in which the government has stepped up with the support of the United States and others, but also very importantly, Africans, neighbors, countries like the DRC, and others from the African Union who are sending healthcare workers. When Ebola hit, Africare had been working to strengthen community-based health systems. We immediately swung into action. We mobilized resources to get personal protection equipment to healthcare workers, to keep health facilities open so that people could be treated for non-Ebola-related diseases that were killing people because the hospitals were simply overwhelmed. Now we see that there is a very big push under the leadership of the government to strengthen health systems. So I think what we will see in 2015 is West Africa beginning to emerge from the Ebola crisis and not just simply rebuild, but build back much better these healthcare systems, which were so fragile.
You're right, but you're right in saying, of course, that the numbers are going down in Liberia. But what about in Sierra Leone? They seem to be rising up.
Absolutely right. And something of a roller coaster ride in Guinea, where the outbreak began.
Malekwa, what about political transitions on the continent? You obviously had something interesting last year in October by way of Burkina Faso in Ouagadougou. People power against President Blaise Compaoré, man who had actually been in charge for 27 good years, having, of course, overthrown and probably assassinated his colleague, Captain Sankara.
Well, I think people need to recognize people power. You know, I mean, you can't rule a population and think that they're just a bunch of nobodies where you can rule. I mean, Africa is now embraced an inclusive political system, what now they call democracy. So what happened in Burkina Faso happened in Burkina Faso. But I need to talk about this.
What do you mean by what happened in Burkina Faso happened in Burkina Faso? Are you suggesting that other Africans may not be able to borrow that template?
No, I think the context is different everywhere. It depends on the context. I think you're talking about how many people are talking now about changing their own constitution and so on and so forth. Now, I will talk here as a lawyer because I'm an attorney and I'll talk as an attorney.
You are a lawyer, but yes. Before you tell me that you are a lawyer, you talked about, of course, efforts for some leaders to change constitutions. When a president is sworn into power, what is he supposed to do first and foremost? Is it not to respect that constitution?
Absolutely.
To protect it?
Yes.
To defend it?
Yes.
Is he supposed to change it to favor himself personally and politically?
No. What I'm saying, the president of a country is a guarantor, if you could, of the constitution. So he has to defend the constitution. But the problem, and I think this is people are becoming very compartmental about this issue of constitution. You know, the constitution are written by people. And sometimes constitution may be changed. I'm not saying that constitution should be changed. You can amend the constitution with an objective to make sure that the inclusive political system becomes stronger in the country. I'll give you an example of the Democratic Republic of Congo today. Look, we have parliamentarians in the DRC. They are voted for 5 years. The constitution says they will stay in power for 5 years. But guess what they're doing? For 5 years, they sit in Kinshasa every day. They never go back to see their constituency. Whereas, I think today, if we can change the constitution to make sure that they're only elected for 2 years, they will start thinking.
So they will try to take care of their population. If they don't go back to consult or interact with their constituents, then who do they in fact represent?
Exactly.
In that parliament.
That's exactly what I'm saying. So we can't say, no, because the constitution says it's 5 years, and it's 5 years, we are never going to change that. We need to look at the situation. What is going on in the country and so on and so forth, you know?
But Mulegwa, let's be very honest. Mm. Who is the primary stakeholder in all this?
The population.
And how does the population assert itself to make sure that, in fact, it is the primary stakeholder, it is the boss of the president, it is the boss of the senator, of the member of parliament, of the chief justice, and not the other way around?
Look at the Congolese constitution. The Congolese constitution was, we had a referendum in Congo on the Congolese constitution. So the constitution actually belongs to the population of the Democratic Republic of Congo.
And but what sort of constitution, what sort of referendum was it? Was it something, frankly, that you reflect that the results, for example, were reflections of the will of the Congolese people?
Absolutely. Absolutely, in our constitution. You know, I was one of the people that was writing the constitution at the time. You know, absolutely. It's a constitution that was done by the population. Say today the population says, look, this is outdated. Some issues are outdated. For instance, the question I just told you about the parliamentarians in the DRC. They never go back to their constituency. They don't know what's going on with their constituency. They will wait again until we have elections. Then they go back to the constituency, vote for me again.
Until you have elections?
Until you have elections.
Are they, in fact, elections? Or are they what some call selections?
No, they're not selections in Congo.
No, wait a minute. I mean, you do have these questionable results. In fact, you have a sort of fashion where a lot of African presidents talk about holding, these are their words, not mine, periodic elections. No matter whether those elections are a sham, whether those elections have been rigged, they are elections. Are these elections, frankly, meant for the primary stakeholder of these African countries? Or are these elections, frankly, meant to appease the development partners of these African presidents?
Again, it depends. And I'm going to talk about my own context. I'm going to talk about the Democratic Republic of Congo. We have had...
Where there are rumors that, that the incumbent may well be in a process of doing what they call shifting the political constitutional goalposts.
No, that again, like you said, these are rumors. But, you know, if you're talking about the president of the Democratic Republic of Congo, the president has not said to anybody that he was going to change the constitution. But, you know, people are saying the
president... He recently criticized the outsiders not to interfere with internal affairs in his country.
And he's right. And he's right. And I'll tell you why he's right. I'll tell you why my president is right. Okay? The president of the Democratic Republic of Congo still has 2 years on his mandate. He's the only African president today that for the past 3 years, everybody's nagging him as though he had said that he was going to change the constitution. There's no time that he said anything about changing the constitution. But people are already nagging him every day, telling him what to do. I mean, you know, you can advise and so on and so forth. But there is no time where the president of the DRC, he has a mandate. Let him finish his mandate, for God's sake. But, you know, they won't even let him finish his mandate. They're already talking about his intentions as though they're in his head and they know exactly what he's done. There's nothing the president of the DRC has done to show that he's trying to change the constitution. He's remained focused on his job. He's remained focused on his vision, which, you know, as you know, when he came to power, the country was in a mess. When he came to power, he decided to reunify the country, reconcile his people, and rebuild his country. That's what he's been doing. But there's not been at one point where President Kabila has said to somebody, look, I'm going to change the constitution. No. Absolutely not. And this is very unfair to try to accuse him of something that he has not said.
I see. I gather that we are now joined by Dr. Henry Gombia. Are you there, Dr. Gombia?
I'm very here. I've been here all the time, and very nice to hear from you, and Happy New Year to all of you.
Happy New Year to you, too. And, of course, Henry is the publisher and the editor of the London-based Evening Post, an online newspaper in the United Kingdom. Henry, you obviously have been monitoring the continent. What is the single most important story that you have covered so far?
Before I go into that story, I want you and all our people to join us in conveying our condolences to the journalists who were killed today in Paris, the journalists from Charlie Hebdo. And we just say, hope that everything can be sorted out and the killers of those journalists are found out. Well, the most important comment that I wanted to make today refers to what Dr. Manz has been saying about the Africa-U.S. summit. Dr. Manz says that this summit produced a lot of money, billions of investment in Africa. But you see, my problem with that is that it is very good to have that kind of money going into Africa. But when you do not have institutions that can take good care of that money is a waste. I don't know whether Dr. Manz knows that most of the African, maybe let me correct that, say a lot of African leaders have been using money into their countries for their personal gains. Now, if you're bringing in so much investment into the country, and then that investment is not helping the people of your country, that investment is helping you to stay in power more, to entrench yourself.
Dr. Gombia, let's not really generalize. Are you in a position, for example, to name some names here?
Of course I am. I can name the president of Uganda, who has used investments to entrench himself, his family, into power in Uganda. I'm not very keen in about what our friend there from DRC is saying, because I can say that I have information that actually the president of the DRC is planning to stay. So is the same happening to the president of Rwanda. So these are the examples. We are saying that the African leaders have got a lot of investment into the country, very good, but that investment has not helped anyone there. Look at the way they traveled to Washington. A lot of them, most of these leaders, traveled by private plane. Now, look at the transport infrastructure in Africa, how it is, how a lot of roads are not there. There's no trains running from town to town. And these guys are going around the world in private jets.
We'll come to that later. We'll come to that later, Dr. Gombia. In fact, there are some pictures which are making the social media rounds of the president of DRC, Joseph Kabila, who was stuck somewhere in his country, frankly, because of the rain, and there is virtually no road. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media, the stories that has had an impact on them last year and what they're hoping would materialize this year. But now, here is our letter of the week.
Patricia Namdi in Kampala, Uganda, writes, "The Boko Haram insurgency in Nigeria and their violation of human rights in the country has been a huge story. Are there any solutions to this problem? People are being killed. Boys and girls are being kidnapped. Who is funding Boko Haram? What steps has President Goodluck Jonathan taken to stop this insurgency? What steps has the United States taken to bring peace in Nigeria? Is the insurgency an attempt to curtail the current president from standing again in the forthcoming elections?"
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidui, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. 2014 was a busy year in Africa. Deadly terror attacks and an even deadlier disease left several countries reeling as Ebola swept across West Africa. Many nations faced enormous challenges throughout the year. And this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what 2014 event or story had the most impact on your life? Well, thanks everyone for using all our social media platform to communicate to us. Let's begin right away with a comment from William Wallet from Juba in South Sudan, who writes, "The crisis in South Sudan has had a major impact in my life. Thousands have been killed and millions more have been displaced. There has been no significant progress in the peace process. Insecurity and fighting continues to severely affect communities and impede humanitarian access across most parts of the country." Another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOA 2014 Africa Review. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. Speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Afrobarometer, who writes, "Quite a bit of them. A major one was the Ebola outbreak, unrest in Lesotho, and also Burkina Faso and the U.S. Africa Summit." Shaka.
What about that, Henry?
Well, it really brings into focus what's happening on the continent. I was trying to think about myself as a professor who has got 54 students in my classroom, and the 54 students representing the 54 African countries, plus two other students who are representing two other states that are not recognized. And I'm saying, I'm tipping up here, thing about the democracy during the last year in Africa. The positive signs about democracy in Africa during the last year was what I saw about the elections in Kenya when President Uhuru Kenyatta was democratically elected. Now, this was one election that has not been the same in Africa for a very, very long time. We had a president very, very seriously elected by the people who love him. I've been with President Kenyatta in The Hague when he was there to attend this case in The Hague about him. And I saw for the first time an African leader who is loved by his people, who people just want to come and see and adore. I haven't seen that anywhere else at all. I looked at the health of Africa in the last 2014. There's nothing good about the health in Africa. No hospitals. The leaders are taking their relatives and children for health checks abroad, not in their own countries. I looked at defense. We have a problem in Nigeria, where there's Boko Haram. Nigeria was supposed, and we believe that Nigeria was the strongest black African country ever, in power, in everything. Look at what is being done by this Boko Haram. They are not being able to counter it. And you haven't seen many African countries coming up to say, hey, this is a common problem. Let's make sure that Boko Haram is gone. I've looked at international relations. Africa is still relying so much on international aid. Now, the time that I've spent in Europe here has taught me that the more you rely on aid, the more you are in debt. Now, Africa is indebted to the West because of this aid. The time is come when Africa should learn not to depend so much on aid. Now, where is the future? The future in Africa, 2015 and on, I think depends on the very African people, the young ones that maybe President Obama is trying to talk about. Those are the future, those that mostly have come in Western countries, seen how things are being run, seen how democracy is run. These are the, I think, are the future that Africa would like to come down, go back and say, listen, this cannot be done. We don't want corruption. We have to do these things. That's
Thank
the future
you.
For Africa. That's everything.
Thank you very much. Mariama, please share some more of the audience feedback.
Well, Shaka, we'll move on to a posting from John Ken Siro, speaking of Kenya and Uhuru Kenyatta. This person writes from Nairobi in Kenya. He says, the International Criminal Court's withdrawal of the case against Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta was a big joke. Justice for the victims was denied. And another Facebook comment comes from Okugbo Omunua Ighodalo in Abuja, Nigeria, who says, the West Africa Ebola epidemic shows that we as people probably do not think and plan strategically on the continent. Human lives must be our first priority. Shaka and guests, interesting comments.
Well, it looks like Mulegwa, you wanted to go for it, huh?
Yes, absolutely. I am very surprised to hear what I heard from Dr. Gombia. Because the view he's giving to the audience now is that Africa is a loom and doom place. There's Armageddon in Africa. Everything is destroyed. There's nothing in Africa. Mm-hmm. That is not correct. I wanted to say this. You know, for instance, on the issue of elections.
I didn't say that.
Allow me 1 second, Doctor. You know, when he talks about election, that the only place where he had seen an inclusive political system where an African president was elected was in Kenya. I mean, I don't know if he's looked at Ghana.
There are other countries, of course.
Yeah,
one could talk about Zambia,
Botswana, South Africa, and so on and so forth.
Africa.
I mean, when he said there's no hospitals, my goodness, some of the best hospitals in the world, you find them in South Africa.
Yeah, but I still think he has a point because, let's face it, man, a lot of African countries, frankly, do not have that kind of infrastructure that you're talking about. In fact, I know for sure in Nigeria, which has the largest economy on the African continent, mm-hmm. when the elite gets sick, they actually either go to South Africa, by the way, where they end up sometimes being treated by Nigerian doctors, or go to the United Kingdom or come here. And it's not only Nigeria.
No, but those are exceptions, not the rule.
And I'm sure it happens with elite from the DRC.
Well, you know, those are exceptions. Those are not the rules. If you come to Congo,
That should be, that seems to be, frankly, the rule for the African elite. For the African elite, the political elite.
Yes, but those are exceptions. I think we are talking about exception, and we are not talking about the rules here. You come to Kinshasa, for instance, we have what we call Hôpital du Cinquantenaire. It's a huge hospital. It's a state-of-the-art hospital in Kinshasa where people are treated, where myself, I get my treatment there, where many of our ministers get their treatment right there. So, you know, to look...
I've written about that hospital myself. I've written about that hospital. I've written about the problem in that very hospital you're mentioning.
It looks like we might actually need another edition of Straight Talk Africa to talk about some of these things.
If I could just say something about health, I think the lesson from what happened with the Ebola crisis is the neglect of strengthening community-based health systems, empowering people to take care of their own health rather than relying on hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the focus for us, and I think there's enormous opportunity for Africa today,
mm-hmm.
With the development of technology, to be able to do community-based surveillance of disease that was completely missing during this crisis. We have a technology partner. We're going to be doing this on the ground in West Africa. Being able to provide at the community level the ability for health workers who are not highly educated to be able to accurately diagnose disease.
I hear you.
And provide the kind of advice and support that people need to treat themselves.
I hear you.
So I think we have to walk on both legs.
That was the sort of infrastructure, frankly, that obtained in my country, Uganda, dispensaries when I was growing up.
Mm.
Thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Thank you, Shaka. Certainly strengthening the healthcare system and hoping that West Africa is going to learn from the Ebola outbreak. Well, that will do it for today's social media segment. We look forward to another great year with everyone. And just a reminder, we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please, please keep your thoughts coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can join our YouTube channel. Simply subscribe to VOA TV to Africa. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. Next week on Straight Talk Africa, experts from the Brookings Institution will join us to discuss what they consider to be some of the key issues facing Africa in 2015. That and more next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much and welcome back. Today we are reflecting on some of the top stories that dominated the headlines on the African continent over the past year and a look ahead to what's in store for 2015. Our distinguished guests are Dr. Darius Mans, president of Africare, a non-profit organization based here in Washington, D.C. Prior to joining Africare, Dr. Mans served as acting chief executive officer of the Millennium Challenge Corporation, or MCC. Mulegwa Zihindura, president of the Center for Political and Strategic Studies and the former spokesperson for DRC President Joseph Kabila. And last but not least, Dr. Henry Gombia, publisher and editor of the London Evening Post, an online newspaper based out of the United Kingdom. He joins us from our studios in London. Well, gentlemen, I have to confess we should have had at least a lady, really. But, gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're most welcome. I'm told to go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. I gather that we have Taffa. Good evening, Taffa from Ghana. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa, and a happy new year to you.
Thank you, Shaka. Good evening to you, Shaka. How are you doing?
Usually terrific, especially with the new year, Taffa.
Thank you very much. I wish all of you happy new year at the VOA.
Thank you very much.
We are forever grateful to you.
What is your question,
Shaka,
sir?
Shaka, before I make my... Yes, let me make some clarification. One of your guests made some comment about African leaders flying private jets. But I can assure him that my president, since he took over, he has never flown in any study jet, even though he has one. So that one I want to be clear. Shaka, 2014 was a terrible year, was very, very terrible. You have Ebola, you have killing all over the continent. But the most good news we have in Africa, across Africa, was removal of dictator Blaise Compaoré. Shaka, the sad of this is that this sad news will continue because you have people who are dictators, they want to remain in power. Look at what is happening in our neighboring Nigeria. Boko Haram is killing people, is killing innocent people. But if you look at what the government in Nigeria is doing, there's no solution. They are rather busy campaigning how to maintain power instead of them concentrating how to defend the ordinary citizens of Nigeria. But they are busy campaigning. And this is what is going on in my continent, Shaka. Anytime I look at my continent, I cry.
Thank you.
Because I see the leaders who are greedy, are only thinking about themselves. They don't think about the people.
Thank
God my president, John Mahama, is doing great in Ghana here. We are grateful, Shaka. God bless you all.
You too. A reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. To participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away.
Once again, let's take a look at Africa 2014, a year in review. On June 2014, U.S. President Barack Obama announces the expansion of his Young African Leaders Initiative. August 2014, the U.S. President hosts the first U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit to discuss the future of the relationship between the United States and Africa. October 8th, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta appears before the International Criminal Court. It's the first time that a sitting president submitted to the court's summons. On October 21st, South African track star Oscar Pistorius is sentenced to 5 years in prison for involuntary manslaughter in the shooting death of his girlfriend, model Reva Steenkamp. On October 29th, Zambian President Michael Sata dies and Vice President Guy Scott is elevated to interim president as Africa's first white leader since Frederick de Klerk in apartheid South Africa. On October 31st, Burkina Faso President Blaise Compaoré resigns after 27 years in office amid violent protests.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidui. Let's go again to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers, and we go to Nigeria. Good evening, Buba. You are most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Shaka. Compliment of the season.
I am hugely terrific, my brother, and of course, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored for your compliments.
Thank you, sir. My comment, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, 2014 have left us internally displaced in Nigeria. We cannot forget the issue of what I came from. I came from Gulag in Madagascar local government of Adamawa State. And as I'm talking to you now, that place has been occupied by Boko Haram. So 2014, as I'm telling you, I am internally displaced. We lose billions of naira from there. We lose millions of lives. I cannot mention just few. Now, another aspect I wanted to talk is I cannot forget the issue of the death of Ali Mazuri, Professor Ali Mazuri. We appreciate his writings here, his struggles there in America. We do not eat here in Nigeria. So also, I cannot forget of Ebola. We were made to take bath with salt and drink salt for the sake of Ebola, which has been imported into our country. Shaka, there are a lot of others to talk.
Thank you. Thank you. You'll have another opportunity next time when we do an edition on Nigeria, but I hope that you'll vote very wisely on February 15th. Won't you?
Okay. Thank you, sir.
You're most welcome. Let's go to East Africa. Good evening, Dennis from Uganda. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, my brother, Shaka Sally.
You're most welcome, Ndugu Dennis. What's your question, sir?
I just want to make some comment and maybe a small question.
You have a minute, please.
I am grateful that President Obama has made almost every effort to try to draw African heads of state, to try to put them on the limelight and onto the straight line so that they would better their administration back on here.
Mm-hmm.
But I would imagine whether they have learned anything coming back from the United States. I am calling from Uganda and know what happens in Uganda. I am happy that Dr. Gombia understands what exactly happens in Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
The question of strong men and strong women still remains a very big issue in Uganda. And Ugandans have still failed to understand how to manage their own society and their own affairs. In Uganda, political and elections are only meant to determine which political party is stronger than which one. They have failed to learn whether they should think like Ugandans, like the Americans do. I want to say that when an American president wins an election, that is a win for all Americans. But it is funny in Uganda, when a president in Uganda wins an election, that is a win for a political party.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Dennis. It was a pleasure to hear from you. And, of course, a happy new year to you. Let me come to you immediately, Gombia. You mentioned something about President Uhuru Kenyatta, a man I know and a man, of course, I respect and was elected by his people, but there is another point of view, frankly, which doesn't seem to have confidence in the result of that election. But that aside, what about the situation of the International Criminal Court? Charges have been dropped in as far as Mr. Kenyatta is concerned. What does that say to the victims, the ordinary people? What sort of justice are they getting?
President Kenyatta himself has said that he was sad that an answer has not been found yet for the victims, and he's sad about it. But you see, the way that the ICC went about this trial was wrong. It was a fraud investigation, trying to buy witnesses, giving them money to go and give evidence into the ICC. And in fact, it was one of my very good friends, Dr. Masanga, who went out of his way, a Ugandan went out of his way, to expose the fraud that the ICC was trying to bring in into bringing into Uhuru Kenyatta. Fraud investigation, fraud people, you cannot be heading an international court and then bringing fraud investigation. It was wrong.
What about some critics who are saying that, yes, you may be right in the sense that your friend David Masanga has done a wonderful job, but what about other voices, frankly, which are saying that what has been going on in Kenya is not only intimidating witnesses, but in fact, some have allegedly even been killed. Others have been compromised. Haven't you heard about those reports?
There is no, I've not seen any evidence. I would have been the very first person to write about those allegations. I've not seen any evidence, and I challenge anyone who's got any evidence to bring it to me, and I will write them, and I will expose them.
Thank you.
If there's been anything, I will expose it myself.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Zambia. You had the death of Michael Sata. Mm. You had a smooth transition, of course, from him to Guy Scott, who is acting president, and you are supposed to be having a by-election on January, in fact, 20th. You also had, back in 2008, a death of President Patrick Lemwanawasa,
mm-hmm.
and you still have to go through by-elections. Mm-hmm. Why can't they make an amendment, frankly, that makes things so simple? If you are a vice president, an incumbent president dies, the vice president steps in, because Zambia, the last time I checked, is not a particularly rich country, frankly, to go on holding elections.
Mm. Yeah, again, you are really now espousing my point of view. You know, when a constitution has flaws like that, those things need to be changed.
Yeah, but not in a situation where an incumbent president is changing a constitution he's supposed to defend, protect, and respect.
Exactly, and that's what I was saying. I said when changes need to be made,
yes,
to reinforce, to rebuild the capacity of an inclusive political system,
yes,
you should do that. In the case of Zambia, for instance,
they
cannot continue holding elections when they don't have money. It costs a lot of money to hold elections.
Well, unfortunately, the time happens not to be our best ally. What about you, Dr. Mans?
I would just say, last word about this. I think 2014, as I said earlier, is a tremendous opportunity. We saw Africa very much on the spotlight globally. My hope, 2015, Africa takes advantage of this. More than a dozen elections taking place across the continent to consolidate democracy.
But we make sure they are elections, not selections.
Absolutely right. But also, something you said very important, which we should not underestimate, is the power of youth. The age difference on the continent, being led by average age 70 plus, average age of the population in some countries below 20. So addressing that gap to have that confidence in the leadership, that's what these elections need to be about.
That's what they need to be about indeed. Well, on that note, thanks to our distinguished guest, Dr. Darius Mans, president of Africare, Mulegwa Zihindura, president of the Center for Political and Strategic Studies, and the former spokesperson for DRC President Joseph Kabila. And last but not least, Dr. Henry Gombia, publisher and editor of the London Evening Post. He joined us from our London studios in London, of course. And thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Batte. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, please. And remember to keep the African hopes alive.